Hey, Scott, it's time for the show. Dude, stop. Don't talk. We're live. We're broadcasting.
I don't care.
It's Tech Bacon podcast, yes?
God, Brian!
Dude.
Give it back. Scott.
Nope.
Step away from the iCade, Scott.
Nope. Nope.
Scott.
Nope, 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 nope.
Note to self, don't give Scott the iCade when we're supposed to be broadcasting the show.
Oh, man.
Brian. Here we go. Yes, you're losing your privileges. Fine. Here, give it back.
Fine.
Give me the iCade back.
Jesus. Okay, I'm not as young as I used to be. That actually wore me out.
That was Scott playing Millipede or Centipede?
Centipede.
Centipede on the iCade, which finally arrived this week, which we're going to review later in the show. And is short version now.
Real quick, like tease.
Awesome. If you want details on why it's awesome, keep listening.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, it's kind of phenomenal.
I don't want to stop. I'd rather just like you.
Yeah. I'd much rather play IK than talk with you, really.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Anyway, everybody, it is May 28th. Welcome to Tech Bacon, episode 13.
Welcome.
Welcome.
We are live.
We are indeed. It's been a crazy week, like not a lot of big, huge announcements, but lots of small stuff that's really, really interesting, probably has some long-term ramifications.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this was a busy week in news.
Definitely. You
know, all the tech news, it was like a steady stream throughout the week, which is fun always.
Yeah, I do feel like I like this time of year because, like, you know, everything's from ramping up because there's so many products that go on sale and stuff gets deployed over the summer, so it can really hit big. And you know, from September on, it's kind of like things will be ramping up, I think, here on out till, you know, through August, September.
Oh, yeah. I mean, right now we're starting to just see releases of things that are going to be the holiday tech, and even though they're not coming out yet, you're just starting to see the sprouts of that right now.
Definitely,
which is fun. The sprouts of that, I don't know.
It's the sprouts, you know. It's you know, coming up from the ground. The sprouts, the leaflings,
like the Jolly Green Giant and sprout.
Are you talking about large green men? I don't understand what's happening.
Wow, what I was about to say is even worse than what I just said.
Oh, now you have to do it. Now you have to do it.
I was going to say because I'm hungry.
Oh, boy. It got wrong early, didn't it? It got wrong really early in the show.
It happened fast.
Yes, it did.
It happened fast.
Anyway, I'm Brian.
I am Scott.
And thanks for joining us, everybody in the chat room. Thanks for hanging out as well.
Yes.
So first thing, I guess, you want to talk about Google had a couple announcements today. Well, we got into some Google stuff first, Music, which we're going to get to talk about finally.
And we both we'll talk about it.
Yeah. but a Google Wallet, basically, which everybody knew this was coming. They finally announced it this week. Do you want to fill in on the details?
Yeah. So Google Wallet takes advantage of this technology called NFC, which is near field communication technology. It's the same thing that it's been around for a while. This isn't anything new. If anybody's used like a mobile speed pass, this is the same technology.
Right.
That's built
which is that mobile thing you just have.
Yeah.
Like
and
keychain.
It's like a little wand and you just tap it, you know, at the gas station. Or
is it a wand like a Harry Potter wand?
No, it is not. Okay. It's more of a small little nub.
Okay. A wand would be kind of exciting.
That would be fun. I mean, you see people like magically tapping their, but sometimes I just don't know what comes out of my mouth, Brian. I don't understand.
This is why we need to warm up.
It's more fun this way. So it's also been part of built into credit cards recently. If anybody's ever had a credit card, it's got like three curved bar symbols on it.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing. They have McDonald's. You can just tap it instead of swiping your credit card.
Oh, that's cool. I did not know that.
Yeah, I have it on my Wells Fargo card. It's they've been building it in kind of – like a stealth
in the background
thing. Just into the credit card itself. So the technology is nothing new. The new part about it is that they're building it into the cell phones,
right?
So
which I feel it's existed abroad already, hasn't it?
I'm not 100% sure. Okay. That sounds right, but I can't speak to it. Sure. I'm not 100% sure, but the Google Nexus S, I believe, is the first phone that has it built in here.
Is it the S or the 4? Oh, you're right. The S came out and it had it, but there's no support. And the 4G is coming out, and that's what they were touting.
Exactly.
Right.
So what you'll be able to do is you'll be able to take your phone to any place that supports the NFC payment system through Google Wallet. Mm-hmm. And you'll just, you know, if you order, you know, your drink, and you go up and you just tap your phone and it makes the charge. Just as if you put in, you know, it's just as if you slide – did a slide of your debit card.
Right. And they have a bunch of like, you know, partners on board for, you know, for this, like, you know, Macy's, you know, Subway's, Walgreens. They have some big names that are partnering with them right out of the gate to kind of test this. And it's starting in New York and San Francisco, I think, this week.
It's like you can go to the Google Wallet website and type in your zip code and they'll show participating partners in the area that you're in, like, right away.
Sure. But it's just like that small in those two cities. It's kind of like a pilot program right now.
I believe it's a MasterCard. It's Citibank MasterCard is their big partner.
Right. But you don't have to be a Citibank card holder to use it.
No, you will right now.
Oh, you will?
Just in the beginning. And you'll be able to apply for it through Citi. It's pretty limited right off the bat.
And I know you go and you get it and like you have basically a virtual, you know, Google card or whatever. And like when you bring it up on your screen, it says like this and you transfer money to that card from other sources.
It's not linked to your debit card. You actually put money into it.
Correct.
So you can either buy a prepaid Google card to add money into it or you can actually direct transfer from a checking account or savings account or whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's kind of neat. I mean, I'm not sure. I've had the credit card version of it for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I've used it like once. You know, I used to use that SpeedPass quite often back in the day. I don't anymore, but
it's interesting. I mean, obviously, you know, we knew this was coming. Apple has their own solution they're working on that's going to come out. We were talking about this earlier. I don't know if there's any solution is tied to a particular tech company, like it's the Google version or the Apple version. I don't really know if that's going to – I don't know if that's going to take off. I feel like it's got to be like an independent. It's got to be either through like your credit card company or something like that because I don't want to be tied to have my purchases through Google or through Apple, really. Not for real world stuff.
Right. Well, I think the key is going to be on the retailer side.
Yeah.
If they have a device that is readable from whoever they want.
Yeah.
Then
you can choose who you trust and want to do business with.
Right. And I think
that makes sense.
Google getting into the game might be enough to actually push it into a useful thing because it hasn't been thus far. And it's been around. I mean, those have been around over 5 years, even longer, on the credit cards. And you'll notice it now that I bring it up. You'll see it on the credit card swipers that they say you can tap it now with your credit card.
But here's what's weird too. It's one of those things that like, the technology of it is really, really neat. And obviously if it's a new gadgety, you know, shiny thing, yay, I like it, right?
Right.
Swiping my credit card isn't hard.
Mm-mm.
You know,
you wouldn't have to carry one. That's the advantage.
But here's my so first of all, I agree, yes. But here's the problem with that. I don't really want to go and have my phone tied to that because I don't lose my wallet. I lose my phone.
That's a very good point.
Because you know what I mean? Because you have your phone out everywhere and you're taking it out and that kind of stuff. My wallet, I always have locked down in some place that's safe.
That's
in
actually
my pants,
a very
and it never leaves my pants
good
unless
I've
got to pay for something.
Losing the phone way easier than losing the wallet. Good, very good point.
And it's like in that sense, it's like, and I know they have the stuff encrypted in a chip, so suppose you can't get to it. I don't trust that. You know, we're talking about hacker stuff. You know, last week, I know somebody's going to be able to go and break this at some point.
Right.
You know?
And I don't know how it's going to work. I mean, you know, with credit cards these days, you're very protected.
Sure.
I mean, if you lose your credit card and that thing gets charges, you're insured against that. If you report it within a couple of days, their credit card company will, no questions asked, refund your money.
Right.
So I don't know the protection that Google's going to have on this, but I'm assuming it's going to be somewhat similar. I mean, but I don't know.
Well, that's going to depend on, you know, I wonder if that will be if Google will protect from that or will it be from the people that are transferring the money to it? Because Google hasn't been great in terms of, you know, consumer protection or developer protection. You know, I mean, they kind of like allow – they kind of open up pipes and allow people to go and, you know, conduits people to conduct business. They don't really go and indemnify anybody.
And technically, it's going to be a MasterCard at least to start off with. So you are protected
through MasterCard
for that aspect.
Right.
So I guess it's going to have that. Now, the other interesting thing about this was if you don't have a phone that has this, you can still use it by getting a sticker for your phone, which I thought was a very interesting idea.
Is it a sticker on the outside or the inside?
It's on the outside of the phone.
That to me is crazy
now,
talk.
Now, I don't know if maybe you can put it on the inside. I don't know how strong the
field
adhesive
is.
But maybe you can put it on the inside cover. Obviously, on an iPhone, you can't. But I bet you on an iPhone, you could put it on the inside of a case. Like a silicone case, it would probably go through that.
And there are already – it's interesting too. There's all lots of competing technologies in this field. You know, Square has, you know, a competing offering basically that's not only just for people – you know, businesses be able to go and, you know,
take credit cards.
But also they have a case that allows this kind of thing as well to work with Square's system. Lots of innovation going on in this whole area in general. The sticker thing though, that to me just seems scary.
I thought it was – I liked the thought behind it. I liked the thought behind it of you don't have to get a new phone to utilize this technology.
Like,
I think that's the thought behind it.
Oh, sure.
It's a little scary.
Yeah.
But you know, the actual thought process that these guys
went
into.
It's nice they want to be inclusive. At the same time, you can steal a sticker and then go and like pay for stuff. Yeah. I don't like that.
I know. It's true. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure these things are going to be really strong adhesive, like, you know, those, what's it called?
But also,
stickers
like,
you put on your car.
I don't want a sticker. I don't want a sticker on my phone. Yeah. That is ugly.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things people turn their phones around every couple of years. I mean, and even if you're not somebody like us, I think people, you know, rebuy phones every 3 to 4 years.
Oh, definitely.
So at a certain point, it's like, okay, you start with these small programs and in a couple of years, they'll be out there everywhere. And I think it's one of those things that probably won't take off truthfully until everybody's already got the technology in their
devices. Once it's in every phone you can buy.
And then it's like, well, I'll try it. And then if you think it's easier, then you go ahead and do it. And they can kind of they can iterate the whole system at that point.
Right.
But right now,
I mean, I see, you know, a company like PowerMat that does the inductive charging.
Yeah.
They have just different backings for phones. Mm-hmm. I could see a company like that doing the same thing for the NFC.
Yeah.
I mean, why not?
Definitely.
It'd be pretty easy just to have a different backing for your phone. And then,
But it is going to be interesting because I think from here on out, I'm sure most Android phones will have it. You know, iPhones are supposed to have it. I've heard it. They've said like it was supposed to. I've heard some rumors that said it's not going to happen. But either way, within the next like 8 months to a year, it's definitely going to be in
that. And it's going
to
be pretty much every phone you can buy new.
Yeah. Except for RIM because they don't do anything and they're terrible and think they live in 1996.
Oh, no. It's not secure. They won't do it. There's no way.
Is that the line?
There's no
Not that we can't get our heads around new technologies. It's not secure. Yeah. No. Yeah, that's the ticket. It's not secure.
Right.
Exactly.
And that's our research emotion rant for the day. We just can't help ourselves.
We got to stick it in every now and then.
Sorry. So that was the Google Wallet.
Yeah. Other cool Google thing is we had signed up. When Google Music got announced a couple weeks ago, we talked about it. We had both signed up, I think, about an hour before they officially announced it. Right. We're like, when's our invites coming? And they didn't for days and weeks.
And we signed up almost identically.
But then like 5 to 10 minutes of each other. Yeah.
Right. And then you.
Yeah. And I basically, I came like, oh, awesome. So I emailed Scott. I'm like, my invite landed. And you get me back. You're like, no, damn it. And then what was it, 5, 10 minutes later?
It was 10 minutes later. I got my email.
Yeah, so it all worked out well.
Have you played around with it?
I played around with it right when I got it. I downloaded some stuff when I got home. I have about 10,000, I have about 1,200 songs. And right now it's, I think I've had it running night and day.
7,000 in mine.
Okay, I've been running my night and day since that night. Was that Wednesday or Thursday night?
Yeah.
And right now I'm about halfway through.
Yeah, I stopped mine a couple of times because I was doing some streaming stuff at home. But mm-hmm. I'm at about probably 5,000 of the 7,000. Yeah. It's close. It's getting up there.
I mean, it takes a long time, and that's a pain. I mean, same as with the Amazon service. What were your thoughts? Especially in comparison to Amazon specifically.
So I really like it in general. I really, really like the upload tool. Mm-hmm. I think I like that better than the Amazon one. It was simple. The fact that you can just choose to mirror your iTunes and that it will add new music as you add, it runs in the background.
Right.
I like that a lot. It's really nice. And I put it on my Mac Mini, so it actually ends up in the system prefs. I don't know if you noticed
that. Yeah, it does. Say, yeah.
So, and it can show you how much is uploading and all that stuff. I like, that's nice. The interface online, pretty standard, I thought. You know, I didn't find anything special.
That's where it really shined for me.
Really?
Yeah, because have you been using the Amazon thing on web player?
A little bit, yeah.
I've been using it daily since we first talked about it. And like, you know, I came back the week after we first talked about it and said how I was kind of frustrated a little bit.
Yeah,
I remember. It's all those problems have not been improved. I think they did one round of iteration, but they haven't changed it since. And it's become very, very frustrating. There are certain basic things that the Amazon service isn't getting right. Like if you're looking at, first of all, you can't look at all your albums in line in like a little list view. You have to do them with the pictures, which is stupid, but whatever. But if you have like, you know, if it's all filled up, you have to scroll through all your albums to find something like around the T's. You can't shortcut to it. And it basically doesn't.
But you can type search, right?
Well, yeah, if I want to go to the thing, but I'm not really – I like to just do it all with my mouse and just go. I don't want to go and have to switch back between the mouse and the keyboard.
Right.
So you have to scroll down through everything, and it doesn't cache your artwork for your albums locally, so it has to reload it every time.
Oh,
so if you start at A and you want to go down to, you know, a band whose name starts with T, you have to scroll down and then literally wait about 20 seconds for it to cache everything. And like if you then want to dip down in from that view into a specific album view to see if you want to get something, you're like, oh, I'll start playing this thing, then I'm going to dip back out. It's going to take you back to A instead of where you were in T or whatever.
Interesting.
So small, basic – interface things like that, which I guess Amazon's never had to really deal with before.
Right.
So maybe they just don't.
I mean, their designers aren't in the Nook realm, but not really in.
Well, the Kindle, though, it's different because it's always kind of like that, you know, one window is one view, you know, and you kind of go in and out of that. There's never a thing where you're dipping down and beneath, and there's not long lists in a Kindle, really, because it's just like, you know, you have your thing, books, and you know, it's fine.
Yeah.
So, that's been annoying. But Google, I feel like, got all those right. It felt like a music player instead of a, you know, a storage service that had some music controls pasted onto it.
Gotcha.
You know, where all that stuff works as you expect it to work.
Yeah.
You know, to the point where I was like looking for my normal like iTunes, you know, shortcuts for like fast forwarding and stopping stuff, which weren't operative.
You know what I did like? But, I like that it takes your playlists from iTunes.
It does.
And transfers
although it
them
didn't,
over.
It didn't tell me it was going to, which made me a little bit.
You're right. It didn't.
Like.
It just did it. Yeah. But it does say we're going to mirror your iTunes. So I guess that makes sense.
But
that
I didn't do that. Fair enough. But, you know, there's that one thing. It's like, I don't want to give them all, you know, I want to give them the stuff I want to give them.
Yeah.
You know, there could be, there's whatever. I just don't necessarily want
to. You just wanted the choice.
Yeah.
But I liked
that it did that. Yeah. You know, definitely. I mean, I ended up going through and like deleting it all because I have different playlists for that kind of stuff.
Right.
But I would have liked it if it had given us the choice. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. It's the integration on the phone side.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
Is it? Better than the Amazon player?
I mean, it's seamless. It's so integrated. It's crazy.
That's awesome.
I mean, as it starts showing up, I just looked at my music on the phone. I was like, it's here.
Yeah.
And it's the same.
And I mean, it does the same thing online. Did you have your like upload screen next to your web thing? Yeah. It's pretty cool.
Very cool. Yeah. And it's they updated the Android phone. I mean, the phone app the other day and added some more features and stuff. They've got the pinning feature that they're using for the movies.
That's for like local storage.
Yeah.
For-
so, and it's so easy. You just, you click and hold on something, either an album or a song or a playlist and say, you know, you
that
put a pin in it and it's available.
That was my big question. Cause they, when they demoed it, it seemed like it was just going to be on a per song thing, which would be really annoying, but I'm glad that
it's album,
a playlist
you can
or
do
album.
It by album, by artist, by any of those, you can click
That's
and
awesome.
Hold and pin it in. And it's
perfect.
Great. I love that you can pin the playlist too.
Definitely.
Thought that was really nice. And it's, I mean, quality wise, streaming is great. It's,
yeah.
It sounds good.
It's weird. I A-B'd it with Amazon. There's a difference. It's very, very small, and I didn't really have the time to do like waveforms, but it did seem like there was a little bit of a difference between the two services. I'd like to go and, you know, really geek out and like, you know, analyze it, but
I do have to say it kills me that there's no store.
That's the
thing. It kills me, man.
It's really interesting.
It's frustrating.
I love the Amazon service because I can, as long as it's not Lady Gaga, I can buy something and have it instantly
we should
available.
Talk about that.
That's just such a nightmare.
Let's talk about that for a second. Let's segue out for
Let's go back. Let's finish this thought and then we'll go back into it. It's so wonderful to be able to buy something and have it immediately there because I have I have a huge music collection at home, right? I want to listen to it at work sometimes, but I don't want to go and have all this stuff stored locally on my computer. Everybody gets mad, you know, not supposed to have stuff in your computer at work.
Right.
Fine. So it's great to have the, you know, streaming. And if I want to go and buy something immediately, normally I buy stuff on my phone and then you have to go and transfer stuff around. If you can just buy it and it's immediately there and then you can go home and get it. And if there's no, it's just very, very easy. It makes, you know, it's getting, I can get the music in the way I want to get it without having to do too much homework.
And you know, on the Google, on the phone app, there's a feature to find music to buy, but then it just takes you out to Google. Like it's built in.
Like, it takes you to Google.com, Google?
Yeah, like music search, music purchase search. I was like, oh, if that went to a store. It went to a store, that would
like
be amazing.
It's like both of them have huge missing components now. It's like the Amazon interface, it's great because it has the store, and that's a huge key component.
The store is
Google
fantastic.
Gets the UI right, where it actually feels like a real music player. And in terms of experience, that is key.
Yes.
I mean, because right now, I'm done with Amazon. Like, I've already switched over. Like, I'm not going to go back to Amazon because if it's, you know, it needs to be about making it easy to listen to my music.
Well,
if it gets in the way,
right now,
I'm out.
I haven't made a decision. Like, I don't know what I would use at the end of the day. But currently, I'm going for – I don't have to pay anything right now. I'm going to go all Google. Right now, it's free.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't I guess I won't be able to really weigh everything until it's what the finalized service is going to be and priced and all that stuff.
Yeah. Well, and that's, I think, you know, that's probably going to be long enough out where everything could go and change in the meantime. It's going to be, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And
like,
we did,
the services could be dramatically different. I would hope Amazon's going to go and improve their service. And
Google may end up with a store. Who knows?
Yeah. But that's the big component that's missing, though, because Google not having the store makes it an incomplete experience. It basically just makes it a way to go and listen to your own stuff when you're out and about instead of being a full featured music service. And you and I are talking about this over the week. And it's, this is my next guys. You know, Josh Topolsky and Eli Patel were talking about it on their last podcast. To be the true next gen like disruptive music service that's going to rethink the way we consume music, we probably need three things. You need to go and have a store.
Right.
You need to go and have, you know, a cloud service of some sort where you can go and like, you know, get everything, all your stuff from any device you want, preferably where you don't have to upload it because that introduces a level of complexity and like waiting and, you know, different devices maybe not having stuff that makes it, you know, not very useful in a certain sense. You know, it reduces its functionality. And lastly, for music discovery, possibly a streaming option. you know, where you can own your own stuff, but you can discover new stuff, and an optional probably,
right.
You know, subscription streaming service.
Right. I mean, that's the killer service.
You know, and those three together make it the Holy Grail.
Totally. Having those three all in one service is amazing. A service like Rhapsody has something like that, except you can't add – like let's say you were starting from scratch and you were one person right. that didn't have any music. Rhapsody has all of that
right.
from day one if you didn't have anything.
If you didn't own anything.
If you didn't
own
anything.
But it doesn't account
music.
For owning stuff. Yeah.
Exactly. But it doesn't have the – I have a huge music collection. I want to upload it to you. You can't do that.
And that's the problem I think for – you know. Movies are different because they're so big and you don't interact with them a lot. Music, as we've talked about, it's personal. You know, you spend a lot of time with the music that you love.
Oh, yeah. You know, I had an interesting thought the other day, and I wonder if this may possibly start happening. Because I have an issue with paying for the storage of my stuff on a monthly basis. Like, I don't like – it's not that I don't like it. I just don't like that you're kind of screwed if you do that. You're really locked into it. And you can't – if anything ever happens and you can't pay that monthly fee, you lose your stuff.
Are you talking about mirroring your storage or just having cloud storage solely?
Kind of both. I mean, obviously, if you're mirroring it, you still – but you lose the service. But more on a subscription level, you know, like I don't like that because
– I agree.
But what I was thinking – and there's a couple of companies that do something like this but on a very small level. I wonder if we're going to start seeing people have their own personal cloud service that they're streaming from home. So you're not uploading it to a locker. I'm just putting an app on my computer that my phone finds out on the internet.
Oh, you can already do that.
But I'm saying, are we going to see that kind of take off?
I don't think we will.
Now with like Fios and UVerse and having crazy fast speeds at home, maybe because that's – to me, that's the best of both worlds. I don't have to pay for storage. I own my music and I'm accessing it from outside.
I think it's a neat idea and I think it has a niche. I think in terms of broad sense, it won't be because if you have to go and leave your computer on or what if your computer gets turned off, people want to not worry about it. You know what I mean? So until we're in a world, I think, where wireless internet is ubiquitous, which I mean in true 4G, true like, you know, broadband speed, wireless is ubiquitous. It's built into everything. And you have machines that maybe, you know, like you can leave – normal people leave their machines on 24/7 because right now I do and
most,
I'm sure – and you might.
Most people do.
I think most people turn them off.
At the home machine, I think most people keep them on.
I think most people turn them off.
But
afterwards.
Okay, but imagine if it wasn't
– Let's go into debate about it.
I have no idea. But imagine if it was built into, let's say, your Fios box and you're storing the music at home on the hard drive in your DVR, quote unquote DVR. And that's streaming up to the web.
That I could see, but that's once again, but that's because it's transparent to the user. You know,
if
something you don't have to worry about.
But I just like having it because to me, that gets you your ownership and the cloud.
Right.
You know, like you kind of get everything all at once, and you're not putting it somewhere else and paying for storage.
Here's what I think it's going to be next, and this is just a total guess. You know, but I think you're going to have cloud locker services. You know, and this is basically what I think what Apple might be going for.
Right.
Is you're going to have that Cloud Locker service. Basically, if Apple's version, its reports have been coming out. You're going to be like what we've been talking about.
It's everything we've been talking about.
It can scan it and then like it mirrors it instantly. Yeah, exactly. It's Lala, which is going to be fantastic. And then I think they're going to have a subscription service that will help subsidize those licenses.
Oh, interesting.
And so you won't have to pay for the locker necessarily past a certain point. You know, I mean, up to a certain point. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, the subscription service along with that's what's going to – because they have to pay for it. These licenses cost the money, so they have to pay for it somehow.
Well, you know what also? I wonder if – because if they're going to do the thing where they scan it and then it's available to you, they're technically not storing every file every time for every user.
Correct.
Okay.
So less overhead.
So and also – why are you paying for that storage space? Because it's only one file that everybody's – not one file. But so you wouldn't – if those files are in the system, Apple can say that doesn't count towards what you're paying for storage.
Right. And like when you get Mobile Me,
you know what I mean?
The iDisk already has a certain amount of storage. But I guess maybe that most people, even if they have a huge collection like you or I do.
Majority of it's going to be available.
Yeah. The majority of it's going to be stuff from major labels or smaller labels that have deals, you know, with iTunes or whatever, so you can do it. And I'm sure I'll probably have like, you know, a gig max of stuff I actually have to physically upload.
Right. Right.
And because that's – and what is the difference between a subscription streaming service and streaming of stuff you already have other than the differentiation of, you know, what is yours and not? And here's the interesting thing too about the Apple one. They're talking about it's going to look just like the name of your stuff. So if you basically – I could have like a 128, you know, encoded MP3 that sounds like crap.
Yeah.
But if they have the iTunes Plus version, I get to stream the high quality version.
It's kind of cool.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's really neat.
Yeah.
So, I think that's very interesting.
And I think eventually that's where everybody's going to go. And if they can do that, like I won't actually need a subscription service. I won't buy into that because I don't want to spend the extra money. But I think that's a way where they can maybe, you know, find a way to monetize it and, you know, get everything in one thing without having to charge people just for basic streaming.
I think people have to think of subscription services like satellite radio. Because to me, it shouldn't be to replace your music collection. It should augment. It should be to augment it, yeah, and discover new music, just like you would do with Sirius. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So if you're going to pay a monthly fee, that shouldn't be all your music, but it should be a way you discover new music. And if you find something you like, you buy it.
Yeah.
And I think that's the same demographic of people that would be enticed by subscription music service.
Definitely.
You know, somebody that's got Sirius in the car, I think they would be very open to iTunes in the car, streaming, subscription music, regular streaming. I mean,
think about that.
Far
and
off.
That's the next step. Like, I plug my iPhone into my car whenever I go anywhere. If I could go
imagine
and stream.
Imagine if it was built in the radio.
Oh, yeah. I mean, insane.
Are you kidding me?
It's amazing.
That I just get the chills thinking about, yeah, that. I'm such a geek.
And once again, guess what? Apple gets license fees for all that, and that helps towards paying all these, you know, streaming, you know,
sure,
things. And I think at this point, it feels like the music industry is at a point where they know it's going to change again. They can't maybe control it. They have to go and like get out in front of this.
Right.
You know, Google and Amazon, like they were negotiating, they didn't want to pay the money. Apple will do it just to go and get first mover advantage. You know,
yeah.
and their business
they are doing it.
Yeah, and their music business is big enough where they can probably go afford to do it, and they have the leverage to do it.
Yes, totally.
And in this time, it's going to be interesting because if this takes off, like what we're talking about, I think technology, broadband, that kind of stuff has evolved enough where, unlike the MP3 revolution, where connection speeds were too small for that stuff to directly affect film and television.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're at the point now where all this, whatever happens with that, is going to directly affect the film and TV industries.
Right.
And people automatically want to go and consume that media the same way.
Yeah, totally.
And the music.
And that brings us into the next thing we want to talk about anyway.
Oh, the Time Warner thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. I posted about this on the Facebook page. Let me bring up the thing. Basically, Nikki Fink's Deadline Hollywood Daily posted an article. There was a conference.
I think we reported – didn't we report that that Flixster was bought by
– Yeah, we talked about it.
Time Warner.
Yeah. Basically, there was an investor conference, and Time Warner's CEO, John Martin, told everybody that they had a brand new plan to use Flixster. And what they were going to do is they were going to have users upload their physical DVDs to the cloud, and then like your friends could go and see what your collection was, and there would be quote-unquote social elements, and it was the next big thing from Time Warner.
Right.
I've spent three to four days trying to, you know, upload my music collection. That collection is about 60 gigs. That's a pretty big music collection.
Right.
DVDs are 4 to 8 gigs a piece. You know how many of those I'm going to upload to the cloud?
Big.
Zero. Never.
Okay.
Never going to upload. First of all, what I have to do is do I rip it and then upload it? Like
let me ask you this. What if you weren't uploading it, but it was matching it like this proposed music service?
I still wouldn't do it because I don't
all
buy
you,
here's why. I don't buy DVDs anymore.
Well, okay. But people still have big DVD collections at home.
Sure, but
and imagine if you just had to pop your DVD in and it recognized it and you have it available in the cloud.
But imagine this.
Why isn't that bad? Why is that bad?
It's not bad, but why would I choose that versus starting up Netflix and then watching it immediately?
But you already own it.
Right.
You already own I mean, I have friends that have hundreds of DVDs.
Sure.
And you have already bought those, and if you have the ability to all of a sudden have them available in a Netflix-style interface.
Not all of them, only Time Warner titles.
Yes, only Time Warner. But imagine if this is successful, you're going to see it across the
board. Here's why I think this is terrible. I agree it's a neat idea, but I think the time has passed.
I mean, that
was a great idea 3 or 4 years ago. That's what they should have done 3 or 4 years. When they were worried when they were selling like Blu-rays with DVDs and trying to go and double dip, that was the time to implement this kind of thing. Because here's the problem right now. It's like, I'm not buying physical DVDs anymore because I have access to everything I want via streaming in one way or another, or digital download, right?
Totally.
I just don't need it.
Yeah.
They, instead of looking towards the future, instead of saying, how can we go and make that great and get in front of that business, they're saying, how can we go and sell more plastic discs?
See, I don't think that's it. I don't think that's exactly what it is. No, because these guys are backing the new online technology that we talked about a few weeks back. So I think what they're doing is they want to launch the all digital version, but they want to grab the people that say, well, I don't want to buy new digital versions because I already own the DVDs.
It seems like this is going to be a silo. This seems like this is going to be a silo service, and I think
all these guys are backing that. What the hell is it called? We talked about it the other week.
Yeah,
they're all backing it hard because they think, and they're probably right, they think that DVD is dead. And they want the digital download is the new DVD. And that's how they're going to get people to buy more stuff. So I think they're actually a little forward thinking in this.
I disagree because I think the idea that people are going to buy stuff is past. I think we are rapidly moving towards video, towards a streaming concept.
You've said that before.
I mean, there are some stuff you're going to want to buy, but for the most part, for the broad amount of stuff, I think the DVD, you know, that whole consumption spike where everybody bought everything multiple times was an anomaly. It's not going to happen again, no matter what kind of media people introduce with it. When you have ease of access and low cost in terms of streaming and that kind of stuff, not everybody. There's always going to be a market for like physical media, but for the most part, I think it's past.
But you don't want to own your – you still don't think – I mean, we've had this discussion before. You still would not be into owning your digital downloads?
I'm not, because to me there's no pride of ownership in a digital download. To me there's like the – I don't feel like I'm owning anything. I'm just owning access to see something.
Just that I don't have to pay for it every time I want to watch it.
But that's I don't have all. To pay for everything I want to watch.
If you're paying a subscription
but
service.
But it's not for that individual title. If I'm already paying a subscription service because I want access to everything
– But what about
then
one day –
Then there's no additional cost
but
for that.
But if the subscription service isn't in your monthly budget – You can't watch anything.
Sure. Which is why I think there's always going to be a market. There's always going to be a market for regular stuff. But I'm saying to me, if I have the choice between I think the broad you know, group of consumers are going to go for low-cost subscription services in the vein of cable and, you know, and satellite and that kind of stuff.
Right.
There's always going to be room for that. Like you said, like kids, they want to get – you know, you're not going to want to like, you know – Well, if you can stream Wall-E, you don't really have to worry about it. But let's say, like, you know, you're poor and you want your kid to go and watch something. You can just buy Wall-E for like 50 – or I guess it's a Pixar title, so it'll be $30 for the DVD. But
right.
You know what I mean? You can watch it over and
but
over again.
But then it can be watched over and over again. Just
I agree.
Like, I mean
– But my thing is, too, if you're in that position, you don't have broadband to go and get a digital download and that kind of computer and tech anyway.
Maybe.
You know?
Maybe.
But to me, it's like anything that is trying to go and like bolster DVDs at this point is wrong-headed thinking. And this thing, to me, it's not about implementing Flixster directly with this new service. It's not about letting
people. But why would they say if they weren't trying to move everyone to digital, then why wouldn't it be only new DVDs you buy are available on the service? Because that would, to me, would be that, okay, we're trying to sell more DVDs. This DVDs
but these are two different things. These are two different initiatives. If they were saying we have this Flixster thing and we have this digital thing, and if basically you can upload your physical DVDs and get access to them through this new digital service,
I think
they were using that as an opt into that thing, I would get that. But this, I think, is a Time Warner only thing, basically, because this is their only social part of it.
But I think the uploading, I think there's no way they're using a different technology that they've been spending money and backing that they're going to use on their own that everyone else isn't behind.
Well, here's the other
question,
too. I think
the interface will be this and the social and all that stuff, but this is going to be available in your locker, that the main digital locker that they're coming out with.
We'll see. I have very little faith in them.
We'll see. We'll see.
Everything I've seen thus far has been like, if there's a cool idea, they'll go in the wrong direction.
Well, you could be right.
I would love it if they were awesome. I would love it if they did something fantastic. But I know it was like Time Warner and NBC. I mean, like a lot of these, they are one of the two companies that has basically been adamantly opposed to moving things forward with regard to this technology, like allowing people to license stuff, allowing people to go and like buy stuff online, to stream stuff online. They have been one of the big people blocking it. So, I would love for them to be awesome. And I hope that they are awesome. I'll have to wait and see if they're going to be awesome before I assume that they're going to be.
So, but now we do know what their plans are for Flixster and when they bought it the other
apparently.
Week.
Apparently, if this is their big idea, it's whatever.
No, I know, but when that was announced, I was like, what the hell? Why in any way, shape, or form would they be doing this? Now, obviously, we can see what their roadmap
or what they think is going to be
loosely going to be. Yeah, exactly.
Not that I'm cynical.
No, not
about this industry at
all.
No,
you're not.
No,
no.
Everything's like a bright shining light.
Yes.
Yes, indeed.
A bright shining light in the cloud.
Terrible.
Sorry. All right. What else we got on the agenda? What's going on? What's in the world?
New Nook got introduced.
Oh, new Nook?
Basically,
cool.
The Nook originally had up to this point had been the Color Nook. It was an Android tablet.
And there was the old original Nook, which they had kind of already phased out, I think. That had like the color screen on the bottom.
Oh, right. That's like the two panel thing. And this basically is one of the, I mean, it's not the first touch panel e-ink screen, but it's, you know, I think Sony had one, but it's the newest one, like I think in the Kindle era, that's kind of like going to be a direct competitor, especially introduced by any kind of bookstore or book retailer.
Yeah.
And basically,
I think they got a shot with this thing.
It's going to be interesting. It's about 7 inches or so. It's a little bit smaller than a Kindle. It's all screen. There's no keyboard like there is on the Kindle. And that uses infrared technology, basically, that's on the either side of the screen to allow it to become a touch interface.
Right. So it's not actually
capacitive touch screen.
It's using light.
Right. Which I'm curious
register.
To see. Have you seen any demos? I'm curious
I
to see
haven't.
How well it really works.
But I did read – I read some reviews and people said
so it works?
You can't tell.
Okay, cool.
I mean, there's really no difference. I like the way it looks.
Yeah.
Like the pictures have no keyboard on it. Like the Kindle's got the keyboard. This look –
It looks more just like, you know, great. Here's just a window into a book. Because I love my Kindle, but I will say the keyboard is crap sandwich. It is terrible.
And not really. I mean, it's not – you're not writing emails on these things.
No. I use it. I mean, most of the time I buy books – like honestly, I buy them online because it's very cumbersome to negotiate, you know, the interface with that keyboard. So I just buy stuff online and then send it to my Kindle.
Right.
So I never use it. It's just taking up all the space and it's kind of cheaply – it's cheapy looking and
right.
clunky.
And when you're typing in the name of a book, it kind of does an autofill, right? So I mean, like you don't need – to type the entire – you're typing three letters and all of a sudden you're starting to see the
– and but it's so cumbersome. You're going with like your thumbnails. It's one of those. It's like having like a keyboard out of a, like out of like, you know, 1992 kind of thing. Yeah.
And,
you know,
and if you can do touch, it's not necessary.
Yeah. Oh, I definitely agree. Yeah.
And I think Barnes & Noble was really smart to go that route.
Definitely.
And build on the success of the Nook Color by going back – to the black and white e-reader. It was a very, very smart move.
Well, it's kind of like the
marketing.
The inverse of what, you know, Kindle's, I mean, of what Amazon's doing. Like they have like the e-reader Kindle, and then they're going to introduce like, you know, a new Amazon Android tablet sometime this year. The Nook, the new black and white, you know, touchscreen Nook is also based on Android, but I guess it's not any kind of full featured Android.
It's no,
just
I mean,
like,
that's just
e-reader. Like, that's the engine beneath it, but yeah, it's just an e-reader. But they're kind of doing the inverse. Basically, they said the tablet first, and then they're doing the reader. The one thing that does suck, and this sucks about my Kindle as well, and this sucks about, you know, iBooks and everything, I hate that DRM is so prevalent on all these platforms. I hate it. It's terrible. And like, it's weird for so many people to get so outraged about the music side of things. I don't know why there's not more upset and outrage about this, because quite honestly, it's terrible.
You know why I think? I think it's because people are – I think, first of all, there was only the Kindle.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there was
so you didn't have the,
you know what I mean?
Like it wasn't a problem because you didn't know you could do anything else.
Right. You weren't going to jump ship to something else.
Yeah.
Now, all of a sudden, there's these other viable options. And I think as more people look and see compare the different products.
Right.
It may start to seep out more because there's no difference in what this is in the music DRM. Why?
Absolutely.
And music eventually and they got rid of it.
Yeah,
so.
And EPUB is available. It's open. Like I think all these things like, you know, support it anyway. It's so strange. But I guess, you know, the other reason why it probably hasn't been more of an outrage is it's music you listen to over and over again. So you could buy something and 5 years later you still want to listen to it. And if you can't get it on your new player, you're going to be mad.
That's true.
Books,
a book,
you read them once and then you're done.
Pop,
disposable.
Digestion. And
yeah.
It's true. That's true. It's – the problem is the same. It's just the noticing of it by the users that just doesn't really exist.
Yeah.
I hadn't even thought about it really until you brought it up.
It's funny though how like certain things become such like, you know, become like such points of moral outrage, even if there's no real world like, you know, usage complication.
DRM,
it's like people
just in
still
general.
Complain about iTunes and it's like it's been DRM free for like 4 years.
Yeah.
Like there's no issue.
No,
like,
none at all.
But this is like this, like just nobody cares and it's all awesome. But
nobody cares. You never see it written about.
But yeah, I bet you're right though. In the next couple of years, because like as I have a book, you know, that I like to go and, you know.
Like you wouldn't – okay, think about it right now.
Because there are books I do read over again.
Sure.
Normally
or
I buy those hardcover.
Or you look up a passage of something.
Yeah.
And let's say you wanted to go to this Barnes & Noble reader.
Yeah.
Now – then it makes you think about it.
But like, you know, what's also stopped it from happening, and here's where Amazon's really smart. If I want to go and read it on my iPad, I can get the Kindle app. So I can still get access to it. So
exactly.
It's a problem, but I don't really notice it.
Yeah.
You know? And it also doesn't help that I think the Kindle app is better than the iBooks app. But it's short.
Interesting. Do you really?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
I've read stuff on both, and I just
prefer the Kindle interface.
Yeah, it's just
well, you, let's, I mean, think about it. Amazon, at their core, has been a book company, and they spent a lot of R&D on the reading experience. I remember when they were coming out with the Kindle itself. What's his name? Jeff
Bezos.
Bezos was talking about the design and how they came up with it, and man, they put crazy, crazy development time into this, and I think goes to the reading experience in general. Apple's not a book company.
It's a great experience.
You know, it's different.
I mean, because Amazon's ultimately they're an e-tailer.
But they're really laser focused on the reading experience.
I think both are great. You know, but I think whatever, it's something as simple as I think font choices, and it's the way it renders on screen. And it's interesting because like it's not the screen, you know, it's not like it. I don't like a backlit LCD or something. It's like that kind of problem. Although e-ink is far superior for reading. But it's one of those things where it's almost like their creative choices in this particular instance don't work for me. Maybe they're too fancy or too refined. Where, you know what I mean? You want to be a bit more basic. I don't know. It's hard to quantify.
Right.
But I was reading like over the Christmas holiday. I got the Kindle app and I was reading some stuff back and forth, and I was surprised.
That's cool.
But, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. But it's very, very cool about the whole tablet space. And once again, I'm still curious to see what Amazon's going to do with their new family of Android tablets and phones later in the year. It's going to be very, very curious.
Time will tell very soon.
And they're branching out and everything. They also opened up this week, and I know we're talking about the Mac download store. Now, Macintosh, you know, and Apple, and it's going to be part of OS X, you know, Lion, which is coming out in a couple months here. But they launched late last year the Mac App Store, which basically is kind of like the iOS App Store. You can download stuff, you know, directly to your Mac and install it. You know, everything's kind of, you know, it's the same deal. Everything's kind of like screened to make sure it's safe, and there's, you know, it's got, you know, certain content restrictions. It can't be like, you know, not getting anything porny for your kids to accidentally download.
Right.
And it's really, really easy to install and that kind of stuff. And they, you know, and Amazon now introduced their Mac download store. And everybody freaked out. And they're like, oh my gosh, like Amazon's trying to compete with the Mac, you know, Mac App Store. But not really, because you download stuff from – I mean, number one, they've always had stuff downloadable through Amazon for both Windows and Macintosh the last few years. And number two, it's not integrated. It's basically – it's just downloads
going to Amazon and you download it. Yeah. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah. You just download like an image file and then you open it and install it, which kind of like destroys the whole point of – the Mac App Store, but to have in terms of having like a widespread option, a focused option for people that are Mac owners that want to go and download software and with stuff that's not available in the App Store, like Microsoft Office, which is not on the App Store, but it is on Amazon Store.
Correct.
It's a great, you know, it's a great channel to go and get content through. I don't think it's necessarily the big competitor that some of the tech press like wanted to make it this week.
Because of the fact that it's really not that new.
Yeah.
Right. What else? Anything else crazy this week?
You know, I think we should go to a review.
Move to
the review, yeah.
All right.
So about a month ago, you know, I talked about how I had there was this thing called the iCade, which basically was an arcade cabinet for your iPad, and it would interface with the Atari's Greatest Hits application for iPad that we talked about as well. I'd ordered one right when they went on sale. It arrived on Thursday.
Now, give everybody a description of and size of what this thing is.
This thing is about a foot and a half tall, maybe?
Yeah, something like that.
Foot and a half tall, about, foot wide, foot deep. Basically, it looks like a miniaturized arcade cabinet from your youth. Your youth if you're our age. You know, I mean, I guess from, like, from your parents' youth if you're younger and in high school. Don't cry, Scott. It's okay. and basically it has this top flips open and you slot in your iPad and close the top. It fits it great. And it has an old school style joystick with a big red ball on top and six buttons.
And this thing is not –
excuse me, eight buttons.
It's not plastic or cheap material. It's like a nice wood cabinet.
It feels heavy and robust, and you basically – it has Bluetooth connectivity, so it hooks up to your iPad via Bluetooth. And it is awesome. It is I ordered it because it seemed really cool and I got excited. And then it came and I'm like, it's cost $99. And I'm like, I can't believe I ordered this. I really shouldn't have spent the money on this. And then I put it together late Thursday night and then stayed up till 2 playing Centipede and Millipede and Missile Command and Tempest on it. And it is just great. And you know what it is? It's the feel of the buttons. I think that's what it is.
I think they use the actual buttons and joystick that they used on those old arcades.
It feels exactly the same. And it just took me back to Round Table Pizza with my dad playing, playing games, you know, waiting for our pizza to come out. Round Table Pizza is amazing, by the way. Pepperoni, the best ever. It's sad they're closing. We need to go and, you need to go and talk them up. It's just fantastic. And like, you know, the feel is great. It just feels like you're playing the real game. Not all games used a joystick, obviously. So sometimes it's not necessarily as great. Like Crystal Castle had a trackball. Missile Command had a trackball. Tempest had that weird rotary thing we were talking about.
Right.
Tempest works though. Tempest works great.
Oh, totally.
Yeah. Missile Command, in terms of fine tuning the way you're getting the, a trackball would be nicer, but you obviously can't get a trackball and a trackpad and a joystick. Yeah. You can't get all five things for like, you know, $100.
But this thing, I was testing it out, Brian. I got over and Brian was like, you got to try this.
Yeah.
You forget that it's an iPad in there. It just seems like it's this standalone arcade game.
Yeah, because the graphics and the Atari thing, it's a direct port. There's nothing like – it's not a rewrite. It's the exact code being run in there. And you just like get lost in the screen and it's like being back in the day. And it's just so much fun.
I mean, if you know anybody that was an Atari freak or a video game person, this is a great gift.
Yeah.
This thing is a perfect gift.
Yeah. They're still on back order actually.
Are they?
Yeah, but we'll put a link to where to buy them at ThinkGeek in the show notes. And what's really cool, and we mentioned this before, is that they've opened up the API to go and access this so other game developers can go and create games that can support the iCade. So if you want to make a game that has touch controls and controls for, the eight buttons and the joystick, you can do that. So hopefully we'll see additional games that take advantage of it.
And how does it connect to the iCade?
It's Bluetooth. And it's really, really simple. You basically like slot it in. You press a certain key combination to initiate the Bluetooth pairing on the iCade side. Mm-hmm. And the phone the iPad sees it, and you kind of have to enter a code, which is the normal thing way to pair devices. And what's pretty cool is like you, that's to get all like 10 digits, basically up, down, left, and right are each a different number, and then the keys are all different numbers. So you kind of use that to enter the code. It's awesome. It's just really cool. So iCade, highly recommended. I'm going to be wasting far too much time coming up with that thing. But
and if you get one, you will too.
Yeah. But you will be very, very happy. You did. Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? It's really, really nice too. Like LA Noir came out this last couple of weeks, and everybody's like been freaking out about it. And I want to get it. I'm like, I don't want to spend the time to do that. I'm going to get involved. It'll take me months.
These games are.
And I mean, the game looks great though.
Oh,
like, I don't know if you played. Did you play Silent Rain?
No.
That was another like kind of like, you know, trying to be like a movie type of real emotional experience in a video game format, which was great. This looks like that mixed with Grand Theft Auto, and the production design looks incredible. But like, I don't want to do that because I know it's just going to suck me in.
Yeah.
This is great because it's a tremendously fun experience.
And you don't have to play that. I mean, you can get sucked in for a long time, yeah, but you don't have to.
But you can go
be.
And play for like 5 minutes and be satisfied. Especially right. if you're not very good at some of these games
taste,
like I am.
Like an addict.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just a great thing to have around. Like, I want to have parties we can go and do. It'd be so much fun.
I can't
poker night and then like, oh, we'll take breaks and play like, you know.
That's fun.
Yeah, it'd be fantastic.
That's very, and it's a great conversation piece. If you have that just sitting in your living room and somebody walks in, they're going to be like, what's that? That's the question. Is it cool or is it geeky?
Yeah. It's definitely geeky. Is it cool or is it geeky enough? Is it lame geeky or cool geeky?
I think it's retro enough that it's cool geeky. Because I think anybody that sees that's their interest is going to be piqued, and it's so now getting to be so old, like us, that it's very, very retro, and which thus I think makes it cool.
Maybe.
Hopefully.
We'll see.
I think so.
I'm going to put it in the closet.
You're prominently displaying it.
Depending on the people that are coming over to the house, I might put it in the closet. Trapped in the closet, just like R. Kelly.
Right. The arcade version.
Arcade. Trapped in the closet by Arcade Kelly.
Wow.
That's kind of magic.
Wow.
Okay, we have yet another multimedia project to put together. That's like the third one.
We're doing really well here.
Yeah.
We come up with some pretty cool stuff. Our brains are flying off caffeine and no sleep.
The R. Kelly fire? Can we do more?
Oh, wow. You're just going crazy now.
I've lost my mind.
This is just...
I need more espresso.
Blowing my mind. All right. Well, speaking of coffee.
Espresso is tasty.
Yay. Food?
Yes.
Can I talk about a little food?
Definitely.
Stuff? Okay. So.
Oh, you know what? And there's one I want to talk about from 2 weeks ago.
Okay. I'll do one and then you do it and I'll finish off.
Perfect.
The thing. Okay. So the other day, there's this restaurant that opened up out here called, and I'm not, my pronunciation of this is not going to, probably not going to be right.
Oh, this is going to be
good.
But
it's Obika. I think it's O-B-I-K-A. Not sure.
Or Obika.
But it's a mozzarella bar.
Or Obika K?
Obika
K. Oh, you went to the mozzarella bar without me.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. No, it was like open like 6 months ago. Yeah,
it's been open for a while. So this place, they have one in New York, and it's actually a franchise from Europe.
Oh, I did not know that.
I don't know if it's Italy. I think it's Italy. But it's a franchise. I guess there are a lot of them in Italy. They opened one in New York, and now they've opened this one in Los Angeles. In Century City.
Yeah.
So it's adjacent to... the food area in Century City, and I'm hesitant to call it a food court because the Century City food area is really not a food court.
The Century City food court, they redid it several years ago, and they did a big remake of the mall. It looks like an Apple store. Yeah, it really does.
It does.
You walk in, and it is that kind of like, you know, shiny, rounded curves.
And a little higher quality places. I love it.
Yeah. Well, not all. I mean, Panda Express is
still
there.
And there is Baja Fresh. But there are some...
But it's a fancier Baja Fresh than normal.
It is.
It's an upscale Baja Fresh.
They have... real silverware in this food court and all this. Mm-hmm. So anyway, aside from that, it's next to it. It's not in the food area.
Right.
It's actually just, you know, next to it. It's a nice looking restaurant. You know, it's a full restaurant. You sit down, you can have, there's obviously everything is cheese based and mozzarella based. And there's like a cheese tasting and there's different appetizers you can have. So we had a couple of different appetizers. We had a fried cheese appetizer, which, I mean, listen, even if it's the worst thing ever, it's fried cheese and it's going to be good.
Sounds so good.
So it was good. Everything we got, nothing seemed hot enough. And I don't know why that was. Maybe it was just the night. It wasn't that crowded, but it was Friday night.
Is most of the food there, is it cooked or is it just like lumps of cheese?
No, okay. Most of it's cooked. I mean, there is, you can do like a cheese pairing,
right,
you know, thing for like $15 a person. But we didn't do that. They had this one appetizer, which was just really strange. It was like a sausage cheese, and they called it a pate, but basically it was like marinara sauce with cheese. with these little crackers. It was not good. And it was I was surprised that they sold this thing.
Oh, it's such a bummer.
Yeah, I was like, that's really weird. Then they had like a – man, I'm totally blanking. But they had a really awesome soup with some mozzarella on top of it. Mm-hmm. I think it was like a squash type soup. Then the entrees, I got like an eggplant parmesan type entree.
Mm-hmm.
It was good. It tasted really good. The mozzarella – the cheese obviously there was awesome.
Right.
But like this dish itself, it tasted like any eggplant parmesan you're going to get at a chain, you know, Italian place.
Yeah.
Like it just, you know, like chain, you know, marinara sauce and, you know, it was fresh and good. But I was a little disappointed.
Interesting.
You know?
I saw the, you know, the signs for it, you know, when they were building it a couple, you know, I guess about a year ago now. But
yeah.
I thought it was going to be just like a cheese bar. Like you'd go and you get like, you know, burrata, you know, and then, you know,
which
this
you
and that.
And I would like to go back and do that experience. Just go get like wine and cheese.
Because that seems like it might be really,
because the
really
cheese
great.
Looked, yeah, the cheese looked good as a dinner experience. I don't think it's a great idea.
I wonder if they opened it for that cheese experience
and then
and added
the dinner
stuff to get people
sure.
in kind of thing.
I wonder.
We
I
should
wonder.
Go for the show.
Yeah. No, I would like to definitely
do like the cheese bar.
Do the whole cheese thing. Cause I love the concept. The place was a cool design and I really, you know, obviously the fact that it's coming from Europe and it's this, you know, kind of new thing that they're trying to bring to the United States, I really like, and I felt comfortable in the restaurant, but it just, you know, as a dining experience,
and, that's a bummer.
You know, I can't really recommend, but I would like to go. I would like to give them another chance and go back for just the cheese and wine part of it, and do it not as a meal. You know what
cheese.
I mean?
Cheese
post work cheese.
add another. Well, speaking of, you know, bacon, we haven't actually covered a lot of bacon dishes. One or two.
Oh,
I was at Food Lab in Silver Lake, which is a great restaurant here in LA. There's one in West Hollywood, and this one in Silver Lake as well. And I was picking up food. And they had something on the menu called pig candy. Now, somebody else was talking about this recently. You say that. What
it
was.
Just the name.
It's bacon, thick, delicious bacon cooked in brown sugar and then cut up into tiny, tiny bite-sized pieces. We got it to go.
Okay, it sounds good.
And we got it in a box. It was amazing.
Is it cold? It's cold?
No, it's warm. Like
it's warm.
They do it, you know.
So
they
it's
do
like
it
as an appetizer sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. Or like, you know, or like a side dish or something like that. I ate my food, you know, my sandwich and stuff. And then I started like, you know, munching on bacon bits and I could not keep my fingers out of the box or my face because I just had to go and keep feeding it. Really, really, really good. I mean, not like the most, you know, mind-blowing pairing. Obviously, you get maple smoked bacon or something. It's similar. But it's like this was like making it this fresh and these little tiny candy pieces. It was just awesome.
They should call it bacon candy.
No, I like pig candy
a
lot.
For some reason, pig candy is off-putting.
But you know what? It
doesn't sound – what you described sounds awesome.
But I see, pig candy to me, that I like the names. It's just kind of like, what is that? It seems kind of like –
I picture something like pink and like hard candy like that looks like a little pig.
That's disgusting. That's disgusting. I think the secret of pig candy is once you know what it is, you know it's amazing. So you like throw the term around. You're like, yeah, right. Pig candy. Yeah.
You haven't had pig candy? What's up, man?
Like you don't like the pig candy?
Come on.
You're not in the club.
You're nobody.
I read about somebody else was telling me that they'd had it somewhere else. So I think, you know, like in Chicago or something. It's out there. If you ever have the chance to get some pig candy, do it. It is great. I wanted to name the after show pig candy. Scott shot it down, I guess, because it does make him think of like tiny pink candy, which does sound gross.
See?
Tiny pink candy sounds gross. Pig candy is awesome. That's what I'm saying.
All right. Fair enough. I'm going to end with one more little food thing, just a sweet aside it wasn't planned, but I happened to have this last night and I wanted to talk about it because it was surprisingly delicious. I was at the movies last night and a friend of mine brought a bunch of bags from Popcornopolis. And I don't know if you've ever, it's a chain of like kind of gourmet popcorn places. You find it at like Universal City Walk and like just different.
Is it like flavored popcorn?
Yeah, it's flavored kind of popcorn. Okay. They do caramel corn and all these different, like hundreds of different flavors of popcorn. And it's a chain throughout the country. So
that sounds very corny.
Ba-dum-bum.
Where's Jamie Dooner in the chat room when you need him?
I know, man. So.
Well, I just ruined you with that, didn't I?
I know. I was like, where do I go from there? So they had all the different popcorns.
It was really good. The end. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You know, there's caramel corn and, you know, cheddar corn and all these kinds of different popcorns.
That sounds very cheesy.
I got, man, Brian, I can't get through this.
I'm sorry. It was just there. You gave me the present.
I know. I'm sorry.
You give
you're
me the present. I have to open the present.
You're channeling Jamie. I understand. Yeah. It happens sometimes. Sometimes you just can't control it. Yeah. It just comes out.
Exactly.
So I got past a popcorn that was strawberries and cream popcorn.
I can't think of anything good
sounded
for that one.
Good. Okay. Sounded interesting. I was like, this is really weird. Like strawberries and cream popcorn. That doesn't seem to go together. Wow. Was it good?
Really?
Yeah. I was totally shocked. I, you know, it tasted like strawberries and cream with a little crunch to it. It was like crunchy strawberries and cream. It was a perfect combination of one of those popcorns.
You know, I can see where that would work though. Cause I really love that freeze dried ice cream you get as a kid that, you know, the astronaut ice cream.
Yeah.
And like, it kind of tasted like that. A strawberry, but it's crunchy. Like it's really a neat combination.
Yeah. It kind of tasted like that. I was shocked and pleasantly surprised. And you know, I like popcorn, but I don't really do popcorn in the movies, but I kept popping that in my mouth the whole time. I'm like, God, this is real. Does it really taste that good? Or am I just really hungry or what, you know, but Popcornopolis, strawberries and cream popcorn.
You have a strawberry thing in general, though.
I do like strawberries.
Yeah.
Yeah, big fan.
I love the flavored, you know, I love flavored stuff like that. When I was in Prague a couple of years ago, went to like, I forget the name of the store now, but they basically had like, you know, potato chips, but all these like bizarre flavors that only now are starting to like filter over here. But there's like hamburger and like just weird stuff like that. They're like,
were they like homemade chips too?
No, it's just like, you know, like,
Just like a chain?
A chain thing. Yeah. It'd be like Doritos instead of Cool Ranch. It was hamburger.
Oh,
you know?
Wow.
It wasn't Doritos, but it was like just like a normal, like, you know,
their chain
brand in a bag. Some of them were disgusting. Some were surprisingly good.
What was the most disgusting? Just out of curiosity, that you can, if you can remember.
So several years ago, the hamburger is the one that stuck with me. Actually, it may have been cheeseburger, in fact, but it's just kind of like, yeah, it wasn't anything. Wasn't like any specific. Wasn't like a Wonka thing where you're like, oh, cool, it's blueberries, and now it's like gravy, and it's no, it was just like, tastes that were weird together. But I like that kind of stuff, and we're starting to see more, you know, interesting chip flavors come around here. You know, because here in America, we don't like anything that tastes strange beyond barbecue and salt.
Yeah, we want ketchup on everything.
Exactly. And,
you know, salt it up, throw on some ketchup, and we're going to eat
it. We're good. Done.
Why are all, like, everyone in America, like, has this weird accent, and, you know, when we mimic them? I do it all the time.
I don't do it because I love my country. Why are you a jerk?
That was you.
No, that was you.
That was you.
This is radio. I'm saying it was you.
Prove it.
I'm looking at you right now.
I'm saying it was you.
Why are you being so defensive? Because you did it? Yes.
Because you did it.
I think everybody knows you did it, Scott. It's okay.
It's okay, Brian. It's fine. It's fine. You can just, you can fess up. Just fess up. It's fine.
Wow.
And that, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah,
you know how we know that I'm telling the truth? Because I'm not laughing like a little schoolgirl right now.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Awesome.
Thank you very much.
Everybody, thank you for joining us. We had a good morning this morning.
Yeah, this was a good show.
So once again, you know, every Saturday at 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, we are broadcasting live. Hit us up on Ustream. The links are up on Facebook and Twitter and all the good stuff.
If you downloaded us, review us on iTunes. We'd love to see that.
Yeah, it's the best way for new people to find the show and everything. So thanks again. We hope to see you next time. And this is Brian.
And this is Scott.
Take care.